And our guest is Angelo John Gage, and his website is angelojohngage.com. And he's the author of From the Mundane to the Metaphysical. You really do have a wonderful respect for animals, which I share with you also. I just don't believe there's any animal that would ever hurt me, or any skunk that would ever spray me, or I just have a kind of a connection to them. And there's something else too. We'll get back to your PTSD, but then after you talk about that, I want you to tell me when you think the country should declare war. That's priceless.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh, you want me to talk about that right now?
Are you done talking about your PTSD?
I'm pretty much the PTSD again. It was more mentally than physically. I do have an ankle issue and other things, but the PTSD comes from the trauma. I think prolonged trauma from being in a war zone. At any moment, I could die. Okay. Seeing death. I've seen people get killed in front of me, seeing innocent civilians who are already dead. Traumatizing to someone who's never been to a funeral in his life. I never went to a funeral in my life. So I was 18, and I saw the destruction that our powers can do. I saw the military might against the Iraqis, and it was just horrific. But then coming back and learning it was all a lie was also traumatic. And the rest of it, it's just all built up. But my PTSD is more about me forgiving myself for what I've been through. And also just, there's also like a physical part of it too. I have a twitching problem, left side of my body. I don't know where it comes from. No one understands what it is. It just manifests itself in anxiety. So I do have anxiety from it, but yeah, that's why I'm a disabled veteran, you know, and a lot of the guys I know come back, not the same. And I help them get their benefits. I help them as much as I could get all the benefits they could get out of the system. Cause they deserve it. Cause you know, we were lied to, we were hurt for it. And we suffer to this day from it. So nobody goes to war coming back the same. I don't care what they tell you, how tough they are. A lot of guys in Vietnam came back with nothing. And they're getting their benefits now. You know, so we got to take care of each other, us veterans.
Right.
I did that. And my friend Michael, who passed away, he was a Marine too. He helped me get my benefits. And I helped my friends get their benefits because they won't really push for them. They'll give you a little rating here and there and try to blow you away, you know, throw you off, but you really got to fight for them because we deserve more. And it's important that we do that. So that's the story of my PTSD. I still have it today. I still have to deal with my bipolar kind of mentality, my depression, my inability to keep focus at times. And then there are times I go too hard. I go too focused, burn myself out. So there's that balance, just accepting even my family, my wife and son, just trying to be normal as a person because I could be like a robot sometimes. You know, so I got to relearn humanity, if you will, because that's what they do in boot camp. They break you down into a robot.
Boot camp is trauma-based mind control.
Yes, that's essentially in of itself is PTSD. But the rest of it all combined, yes. And then coming back to civilian life, you don't know what to do with yourself. You've been told how to think for 4 years,
right?
And now it's like, all right, you're on your own. Good luck. Yeah, you don't know what to do with yourself. So.
And that's something I couldn't deal with when I was in. Yep. Yep. I just couldn't deal with people telling me what to do because I felt relatively bright. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like to be told what to do by somebody that
wasn't
smarter than.
Exactly.
That I had, you know, 40 points higher IQ than they did.
That's another problem I had. All these people for like they were so stiff. Like, really? This is my staff sergeant? Okay.
Right. Yeah.
But speaking of which, war, you were talking about the section where
I love that. Oh gosh. Yeah. Tell us when you
Well that I mentioned Smedley Butler and he wrote War is a Racket and he said the people who should vote on war are the people. The citizens should vote. You know, I took it to a step further though. I took it to where the president should not be the commander in chief at all because he's a civilian. He doesn't know. Should be the top general. I took it to where there should be a voting system where the people vote for war, not Congress. Congress only tells the presidents and the generals that we're declaring war type of thing because we don't have that right now. We should have a direct democracy when it comes to war. Direct democracy means literally there should be a system of voting where It's through blockchain technology where the people vote directly. We wouldn't have wars. That's what would happen. Nobody would want it. And some will argue, well, then the people don't know any better and they put our country at risk. Please. Please.
Our country's at risk by what's going on now. Yeah.
Our country is the risk.
Yes.
But that's why Smedley Butler was a good person. He understood the military-industrial complex. And if you take away the presidential war powers and his ability to deploy the Marines anywhere he wants or launch a Tomahawk missile when he feels like it, that could start a war in of itself. I mean, this is why it's stupid to have this power. He should not have that power, the president, at all. And Congress, they say they haven't declared war in a long time. Some people say they have, whatever. But the point is they shouldn't have power either. The people should only have power because they're the ones who are paying the price of war with their taxes and they're sending their daughters and sons to war. These congressmen aren't. So we should not allow these people to declare war. It should be the people who are paying the ultimate price who declare war. That was that section. And I think nobody would disagree with it other than the people who are military-industrial complex.
Right, and it's very large. And it's grown over several decades.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Well, I just love that. I thought, oh, that's just really perfect. And the fact that you brought up Smedley Butler,
yes,
that just clinched it.
It's a small, it's a very quick read, Dan. It's like 12 pages. You could read it. Yes. Having coffee, you could read it. But,
Okay, I've got so many post-it notes in your book. I should own stock. It's like that. Okay, I was trying to figure out what I practice energy medicine. I was trying to figure out what rhythm you were. There are five different rhythms. And depending on what kinds of things that you experience physically, illnesses is often dependent on what rhythm you are. And I think you're a perfectionist, for one thing. You probably have lung issues and maybe large intestine issues.
No, I don't have, I don't really get, I'm really healthy actually.
Oh, okay.
Very healthy. I mean, digestive issues. Yes. I had some of them and then I stopped eating red meat.
Okay.
I actually went vegetarian. I actually went vegan for a while because of what I mentioned about the animals. It's just horrific what they do to these animals.
Oh, I know.
But I started eating chicken again. The red meat has been an issue. My whole life I've been eating red meat. I kind of got rid of that. Mm-hmm. So now my digestion's better.
Good.
Yeah. So my thing for it's always been digestion, essentially. Going to the bathroom, if you will, has always been an issue for me.
Okay.
That's really the only problem. I don't get sick. I never got the flu. I got this COVID thing, whether it's real or not. I don't know. People argue it, but I got something that took me out for a month. Really strange. Didn't get fever. Didn't get the cough. While my father-in-law got the sense of smell, lost his sense of taste. My son got headaches. So we all got the COVID thing, which I think is real in a sense. It's probably a weapon, honestly, just to shut down the economy. But I got it for a month. I was just knocked out. My back was hurting and I was really tired.
Lower back?
The whole back, whole thing. Like I worked out, which makes no sense. But it was a lethargy I've never experienced before. I'd rather have had the flu, which is 5 to 7 days, you know. But this thing was weird. And I got over it just a few weeks ago. And I was like, wow, and I feel better. But, it was something different. You know? And I know people might not believe there's something out there, but I don't see why the government wouldn't spray or use chemicals. They have before. So
They are spraying as we speak.
So, I mean, they've done experiments like this Operation Sea Spray where they let bacteria out in San Francisco. They've injected people with plutonium in hospitals. Yes. Didn't tell them. They did the experiments on the African-Americans. I don't see why Wuhan Labs wouldn't release the virus or make it on accident. I don't think it's from a bat. I'll put it that way. And the way it's affecting the world, and it affects people differently, too. It's very interesting. People get ventilators. Some people are totally fine. It's a very strange thing, whatever this thing is. But I certainly got something. And I'm just saying this because I never get sick. I don't get the flu. I get not, for years, I've been healthy. I eat right. But the only problem I've had was digestion from the red meat. I finally learned when I went vegan and I started incorporating food again just to see, it was always the red meat the whole time.
Oh, the other thing you said, which made a lot of sense to me, you were saying that you were talking about junk food.
Yeah.
And you said something to the effect that people aren't willing to spend money for good food.
Yeah, they're not, yeah.
That their wealth was more important than their health. I thought, what a great quote.
Yeah, that's true.
Isn't that what you said? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they put their health they put their wealth over their health. They rather they're worried about their money when they're going to spend it on their health anyway when they're sick when they don't eat right.
I thought that was what a beautiful quote that was.
Same thing about mattresses, buying your bed. You should buy a nice bed for yourself. You're going to be on it for 10, 30 years, you know? It's going to be That's one thing my friend told me. He's like, you know, why are you so cheap in your mattresses, man? You're going to spend a third of your life. I'm like, you know what? You're right. I'm like, so
exactly.
I bought myself a nice bed, you know, a few $1,000, $2,000-something, and it's got to spend. Because, look, you just divide it by the years, 200 a year or something, right? But people know, I want a cheap bed. Well, now you have back problems, and you can't sleep, and, you know.
Right. So,
might as well spend you're going to spend a third of your life sleeping on this thing. You might as well spend the money.
Absolutely.
That's my view, too. So that's a mundane entry, right? At the end, it's just a little stupid thing, but...
But it's just...
It's common sense.
But it's important.
Yes, it's common sense, too.
Yes. So. We do have a caller.
Okay.
Let's take Charles in Florida. Charles?
Yeah, how are you doing, Deanna?
Great, and you?
Yeah, fine. I had a friend of mine that's now deceased, Gene. He was a veteran of Vietnam, and he was also a counterculture. But he admired Alan Watts a lot. His favorite phrase from Alan Watts was, "They washed nature clean of magic." Mm-hmm. He always quoted that.
I love Alan Watts. He's so great, and he's very playful. He's very playful, though. He's not like a serious guru. He doesn't really talk. He died of drinking alcohol too much, and that's what happened to him. But he wasn't like full of himself, and all of his. You could just listen to Alan Watts on YouTube all day. There's all these motivational speeches and videos, and he really affected me much when it comes to the whole of the universe. Like Marcus Aurelius, they were all people who believed the universe is one thing and it all goes with the flow. And so Alan Watts, he just made it more playful for me because it's very serious stuff, but he delivered it in such a great way. Mm-hmm. And I quoted Alan Watts in this book too. And he basically says something, everyone's trying to be something they're not, or trying to be someone else when all they have to be is themselves. You know, they're not happy enough being themselves. And that's something I've always struggled with, trying to be someone else, trying to emulate somebody when all I have to do is be myself. So Alan Watts really affected me as well, the way he was. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah, he always admired Zen and Shintoism and Taoism, you know, the Oriental religions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He knew quite a bit about it. And he had quite a bit to... radio stations in San Francisco, KPFK, I think he had to do with the founding of it. Public, I'm not sure, I read his autobiography. I know he was born in England. I might have been, he was...
Ken, what'd you say?
Pardon? Hello?
You mean Alan Watts? Yes, yes, yes.
Pardon?
That's our producer. Oh, I see. Okay.
No, the producer was just saying Alan Watts did a TV series on that station.
He didn't found KPFK, or I have the names wrong, or It was a famous station in San Francisco.
Right.
The whole network of kind of liberal, progressive network.
Right. Charles, do you have a question? Do you have a question for
Oh, no, time? Just statement. No question. Maybe I had another friend who was a bonus marcher in the 1930s.
That was
up in Washington, D.C. when Eisenhower and MacArthur and Patton were riding around on their horses. My friend from Lansing, Michigan, Rex, he was also interested in Oriental religions, but he had joined the army when he was 15 years old in Columbus, New Mexico, for the First World War. And he got to meet Smedley Butler, he told me. Smedley Butler was the only one that came to the bonus marchers, you know, when they were camped out there.
Right.
You know, they drove them out of Washington, D.C.
Yes, they did.
Cheapskates and the government wouldn't even pay him a bonus from World War One.
Exactly.
And he didn't admire Patton. He said he saw him riding around, too, on his horse, just like MacArthur and Eisenhower. It's three people he didn't exactly like.
No. Patton learned later on what was going on.
Yeah, he learned, and then he had an accident, apparently.
Yes.
Interestingly enough.
Yeah, I know about Patton's... you know, he did privately. He did a lot of things, you know. But if he'd survived, and the OSS had knocked him off, I'm sure he would have been different. But still, what those three did, you know, in 1933, I think it was just before Herbert Hoover was still
Herbert Hoover.
I think it's 1932. Yeah.
Yeah. Herbert Hoover was a terrible.
Smedley Butler was the only one that came out to visit the bonus marchers.
Right.
Yeah, that's about what I wanted to say to you, you know, so you don't have to.
You got to fight for those benefits because they weren't giving them. They weren't giving them out.
Yeah, they were real cheap back then. Congress didn't want to let a dime loose, you know, for veterans, especially World War One veterans, make the world safe for democracy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, sure. War to end all wars. Yeah. Well, of course, that is true now. World War number three will be the world war to end all wars.
Yep.
It literally is true.
So hope we don't see it, though. Hopefully not.
Smitty Butler's right, you know.
Yes, war is a racket. And he died in a facility, a government facility. He went in. He was feeling fine. He'd been through World War One. He treated his men so well. He was wonderful. He made sure they had more rations. He made sure that they had a clean camp. He was wonderful with his men. And my grandfather was with him as his aide. But he was wonderful. And then he went into a government facility, and he was gone within 2 weeks. I believe that they eliminated him.
Yeah, it's possible.
Just as they've done other people.
Yep.
Yeah, he died before we got into World War II. Died in 1940. Smedley Butler.
Right. He was going to spill the beans about warfare. That was his whole.
Oh
purpose.
Yeah. They asked him to take over the government. You know, to set up some kind of fascist, or he called it an authoritarian state, you know, the big wigs back then, the head of the Los Angeles Times and Morgans and Rockefellers and all them.
They were just trying to get him to do what they wanted. Yeah.
They actually had a TV program about it in the 1950s. About Los Angeles, it showed somebody playing Smedley Butler involved in the in Los Angeles, involved in the people. I can't remember the name of the people that owned the L.A. Times. Anyway,
I'm not sure. Probably same
one
people.
One of the families that were behind it.
Right. Well, thank you so much for your phone call,
Charles. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Charles.
Take care. Okay, we have Frank in New York. Frank, welcome.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Yes, good evening, everyone. Hi. Your guest, I'm sorry I didn't get your guest's name. I have a lot of static on my line. What's his name?
Angelo.
Oh, Angelo, okay.
Yes.
Did you see the film clip that was made about the Blackwater Massacre of the 17 people in Iraq?
I know about it. I know that they let the guys off, apparently. The mercenaries, the Blackwater guys. Another Trump present departing these people.
Yeah. Pardon all the criminals, the murders.
Yeah, and these are guys who are making $120,000 a year while us Marines are making pennies, right, per hour.
Right.
And they just massacre these people, and they're saying, oh, they didn't shoot, but they did shoot. I mean, we'll never know exactly, but I highly doubt civilians are shooting at people for no reason.
Exactly.
So, it's just another tragedy. But yeah, I know the story. I don't know the details exactly, but I do know they got off, and that's terrible. Obviously, it's horrible.
Yeah, they did. Well, a website that is, derided and pilloried from post to post is Democracy Now! Mm-hmm. Now, is it quote-unquote left-leaning, which I don't think that should be a negative. It's just something, Democracy Now! Is where they're coming from.
Yeah.
And they did a whole 20-minute section about that. Interviews with the family members and so forth. And I couldn't look. I'm a tough guy. I was born and raised in Newark.
Yeah.
And I had a hard time dealing with that. Yeah, the atrocities that happened with these innocent people. They weren't combatants. They were innocent.
Yep.
So I'm asking, I guess I'm asking you is, in your circle of friends, who do you talk to? Do you talk about things like this?
Yes, I mean, I said earlier in the show, I thank God I didn't kill anyone, because if I had killed even an Iraqi soldier, I would have killed an innocent person. I would have killed a freedom fighter, because technically we're invading Iraq, we're the bad guys, and if I killed one of them, I would have killed a freedom fighter. I'm the terrorist. I'm the insurgent. So I would have been upset. I did have a friend who was a sniper, who is a sniper, or was. He almost took his own life, because when I became friends with him a few years ago, he eventually learned the truth from me. Everything, all the truth. And he's like, Angela, I've killed people. I think he killed 15 people. He's like, I see them in my bed, at the end of my bed at night. But, you know, I said to him, Rocco, I said, you didn't know any better, brother. You know, you didn't know any better. It's not your fault. And, you know, there were times it was legit. He had to shoot somebody. And there were times it could have been a kid with a gun or maybe not a gun. You know, it's just... But he saw his friends explode in front of him. He was a recon sniper, very, very in the trenches. I was a combat engineer. I'm supporting infantry. He was before the infantry. So it's very terrible. But, yeah, you know, we talk about this. Yeah, we have a combat action ribbon. My unit got a combat action ribbon, but we weren't in the combat that you would see in the movies. I was a support battalion. So I was in combat zones. I saw bombs explode, people and all that stuff like that. But I wasn't in the front lines. I was behind the front lines, whereas my friend was in the front lines. So he talks to me about what he did, and he's like, man, it just changes you forever, you know? So it's tough, and that's why a lot of these veterans, they need help. That's why they kill themselves. 22 veterans take their lives a day.
Yeah.
Because you don't take people's lives and are not the same, especially when you come back and there were no weapons of mass destruction, especially when you come back and there is no freedoms you've gained. One guy yesterday on Twitter is like, oh, why are you so anti-patriotic? Don't you want to fight for your friends? I said, what freedom did you gain from any of these wars? In fact, your freedoms have been taken from you with the Patriot Act.
That's right. Yeah, that you're absolutely right about that. I think the thing that struck me the most and hit me the hardest was they showed in a piece they showed the killers, admitted killers, walking to the courthouse back and forth, smiling, smirking, and smiling. They seemed to have no sense.
Not all
of what
Americans
they did.
Are brainwashed. Yeah, we're starting to wake up as a country.
But nothing will happen to these guys. They're going to get off. They're going to go live in the suburbs somewhere, yeah. And they're not going. They've been pardoned. What happens? Nothing happens to them.
I know, and there's probably more like that. There's probably more you've never heard of before. You know, and that's why these whistleblowers like Snowden or whatever, they have to run away from our country because they expose, the one cameraman, that one Iraqi cameraman and his crew were massacred by the helicopter, and they were just cameramen. Oh, he has a bazooka. I've seen all that stuff. It's horrible. Yeah. There's always war crimes and war, whether they're intentional or accidental. You know, it's a disgusting thing, war. You know, all hell breaks loose. And
right, but these were not military. They were paid mercenaries.
Yes, they're murderers essentially. That's what they are.
Right, and the Secretary of Education
is
still there,
Black?
Even though her brother. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can you expect a urban community to be sane and whole when you have this madness in the suburban white communities?
Absolutely. That's why, you know, Newark is tough. How are the cops there, right? They're I lived in Newark. I lived in Ironbound for 2 years. So I was there. And, you know, it's a little safer than the other part of Newark, but that's the issue there. There's police stuff that's going on. There's corruption in the police departments. Obviously, you know that. We have a lot of problems with everything. Every institution, there's corruption of some level. It's because, you know, the people need to unify with each other, regardless of race, regardless of ideas or ideology, and stop the corruption. The corruption infects everything. It's not just Blackwater. It's even the police departments. It's the medical industry, the media.
Oh, right.
It's everything. Yes. And it's, you know, you can only blame them so much, because we, the people, have to say we're done. We're sick of this.
Do you really expect American people, considering and thinking about the present mindset, to really make that really change?
Because they're not suffering enough, you see? The people are well-fed. They can go to Burger King, get a burger right now, go on to Netflix, turn on your app, play a game, you know, go watch pornography for free. There's no reason to revolt, right? Oh, well, this guy got shot. Oh, that sucks. You know, whatever. Pick a person. Oh, police brutality. Yeah, that guy shouldn't have been killed. And they just move on with their life. And the media has desensitized us to these tragedies. Every day it's a tragedy from across the world. Nobody cares anymore. And not that they don't care. They don't have time to care, because then there's another tragedy and then another problem. And then there's this problem with that community and this. And so people are so overwhelmed. Not only with that, mentally, they have mortgages. They're in debt, $200,000 for a student loan they should have never taken out. They have problems with their loved ones. We are bombarded with information, a lot of disinformation, by the way, that we don't even know what the hell to do. And then we're divided racial, Black versus white, male versus female. Like I said before in the show, they divide. They know what they do. They know how to herd the communities against one another. With race baiting, you name it, the police brutality thing. We all know there's police brutality at some level. We all know that. We all know there's people who are racist. We all know there's people who are evil. And we know there's injustices happening every single day at the highest level of government. It's just that people need to suffer more. I hate to say it, but it's true. People are not at that level because they're not suffering more.
Right. You know? All righty. We are going to take a break, and thank you so much.
Thanks for your
Frank.
Call, brother.
Take care. All right, we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, We also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. The Republic Broadcasting Network late night premiere show of Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the red pill.
So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts.
All righty.
With you.
Welcome back. Our guest is Angelo John Gage. His website is AngeloJohnGage.com. He is the author of From the Mundane to the Metaphysical. It's a fabulous book. It gets you to thinking very deeply and introspectively, especially if you're that kind of person anyway. I love the book. It's a fabulous book. Okay, we have Kathleen in Texas. Kathleen?
Hey, Deanna, and do you go by Angelo?
Yes, Angelo's fine, yeah.
Angelo. Well, sometimes people have shortened it, or anyway.
Yeah, people call me Ange, but, you know, you don't have to call
me Ange.
Or Gage.
Well, now that we're best friends.
They call me Gage, too. Oh, Gage is from football, Marine Corps, but anyway. Angelo's fine, whatever you want to call him.
Yes, okay. well... I know you said you were a vet. Now that I know that Deanna was a vet too, I didn't know that, Deanna, till today. But my daughter she has this business, neurofeedback, mm-hmm. and it's for all kinds of stuff. It's not medical, but it's. They have lots of success with people with PTSD and all kinds of stuff. So once a week she has free appointments for first responders, vets, and everything. So Do you want me to give you the website?
Yeah, if you want to, sure. I mean, I've
yeah,
done,
well, you were talking about that. It's kind of anyway, so it's in the pink,
inthepinkwc.com,
and then I think the other one is serenityneurofeedback.com, I believe. But anyway, but the first one for sure I got right, inthepinkwc.com. And so she has a special, she always is wanting to do some kind of benefit for first responders and vets and so on. And so I just thought I would mention that. So the other thing is, did you say that Alan Watts is he still alive?
No, he died a while back.
My goodness, I'm shocked because he used to be on RVN, and and then the owner asked him to change times, and
it's
he said,
different
"No, thank
Alan
you."
Watts. It's Catherine.
Oh, a different Alan Watts.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you sure, Deanna?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Alan Watts I used to hear, everybody just loved, and he had an English accent. And
yeah, that's Alan Watts that we're talking about, but I don't know how he's on what network. Oh, really?
They're both English, they're both, right?
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
But, okay. And then, and it's been very interesting, and I love the thing about the words and not having fillers. Take a pause rather than say and ah and all that. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, hearing about people going through the unreality of killing other people and, and then coming back and supposed to have a normal life. And then, facing death all the time, firefighters and police officers and, you're all in my prayers.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Okay, take care, and thanks, Deanna.
Thank you. All righty, let's take John in California. John, welcome.
Happy New Year, Deanna.
Happy New Fear.
New Fear.
Yeah, try not to think about that. It's been a great show. I heard the first part of it, and I had to get off the second. I just came on the last 45 minutes, but you were talking about veterans and some of the things going on and what went on. It's interesting. I was in the Navy during Vietnam, 73 active, and stayed in the reserve another 8 years till 80 and then got out. But it's interesting. Oh, funny thing, quick story. The night before I went to basic, I watched the movie The D.I. with Jack Webb. I don't know if you've ever seen it. If you ever could find it, watch it. And he's the ex-Dragnet police. But he played a drill instructor in, I think it was 1950s in Paris Island, South Carolina. It's a great movie. You talk about watching The D.I.
So that's funny.
It's interesting. And yeah, Deanne, I didn't know you were in the Marines either. So it's interesting what you were talking about, your experiences. But with today's military, you talk about Marines, and I'm not singling them out, but it seems like recently, you see a lot of ads for recruitment now, especially the Marines. From you, the Marines for years never had to advertise because, at least on TV, because they were always filled their quotas. But when they started not being able to, you started seeing them on TV. First you saw them, guys parading in the parade grounds, and the next thing they're showing in basic training. And then recently you show them, they're actually fighting in the middle. It looked like Middle East. I don't know if they're mock-ups or actual pictures they put together and, firing on buildings and on people and that. Don't see actual people being killed, but, blowing up buildings and all that. And it makes you think about just what it's become like. And it's too bad because I had an uncle. He was a lifer, actually a Mustanger, if you know what a Mustanger is in the Marines, listed all the way up to he was a colonel.
Yeah, yeah.
And his oldest son was also during a time I was in Vietnam a few years back. But my wife's oldest brother was in the Tet Offensive in the Army, and he went through a lot, and he had some Agent Orange on his lower extremities, and he survived it to this point, but you know, just what he's going through, so it's not terrible. He's been able to function, but he was in the hospital a couple of months ago with was diagnosed a urinary infection, and I always wonder if there's still some of that Agent Orange bothering him.
Oh, it stays so, in your body.
Well, they have to. Yeah. They really screwed over Vietnam vets. They really didn't care about them until recently. That one of the judges had to fast the cases.
Right.
So many backlog. They're like, well, I'm going to pass this. We're going to make these cases fly because a lot of the guys didn't get any help and they didn't get any love either coming back from that place.
You know, another interesting story. I read through American Free Press. There's a senator from Illinois, Tammy Duckworth, and she was a veteran. She was a double amputee over in, I think, Iraq or Afghanistan, flying helicopters.
Right.
And, you know, feel for that, but then the article was about, you know, what she's been doing to just kind of whitewash all this stuff with the problems with the VA. And you think about what you're going through, and, you know, and then I see these veterans, and the biggest one is the Wounded Warrior Project. They keep advertising for money on TV, and of course they show these vets that really, you know, terrible in their wheelchairs or, you know, they're mentally, you know, which what it's done to them. You feel for them. And then I think to myself, you know, if I saw them walk this, I'm, you know, thankful for what you did, but I'm really sorry they put you in harm's way and what happened to you.
Yeah.
You always think about what reaction you might get from, well, them or even the families, you know, if they said, yeah, or they said, oh, no, he did his thing. Then you're wondering if, well, you know, then why? Did you deserve that if you felt I went over there to blow people up to save America? I wouldn't want to say that to somebody, but you think about that sometimes. How these people really felt going over there. And then here's what happened to you. Well, you got what you deserved. I don't know if you remember the movie, too. Was it Sniper?
Mm-hmm.
2 years back, that he was over in Iraq, and then he came back, and then he was killed by another veteran. He had a mental problem or something. And it's... You know, it's really sad what it's become in the military. And I know the Army Rangers, you don't hear about anymore. I think since they had the debacle in Mogadishu, Somalia, where they killed those guys, they were left behind. And all you hear about now are the SEALs.
Right. Yeah, I was saying, a lot of this military is not political now. You know, it's not the same, and there's so many lies about these wars. A lot of the guys, they just can't handle it. They off themselves 22 a day. It's very sad. That's why I try to avoid a war at all costs, because it just affects more than the person in war. It affects the country, affects their families, affects the wives and husbands who lose their lovers. It's the children. I mean, how many generations in Iraq have deformities because of depleted uranium that we used? You know, it's just, this is the worst thing that mankind does is war. And that's something what we have to all work together to avoid. And like you mentioned, what they're doing now, with the promoting the war in movies, whether it be in commercials, making it glorified. Because I joined the Marine Corps because it was the baddest thing, right? The coolest uniforms. Oh, I want to be a sniper. I want to be all. I had all these little, you know, maniac G.I. Joe dreams in my head to be something cool. That's why the Marine Corps sucked me in. I want to be part of the baddest branch and do all this. And they made me a combat engineer. That's all they did. But yeah, I mean, I tell people who want to join, don't join. Don't join anything. If you have to join a branch, go join the Coast Guard or something. Go stop drug dealers or something like that. Do not go overseas. You know, avoid signing up for these bankers' wars. That's what I tell people.
And the last thing I forgot to mention, my youngest stepdaughter, well, my wife's youngest daughter, she was a Naval Academy graduate. She ended up a pilot. She flew helicopters in the Far East for the first turn. Then she went over flying fixed wing over Bahrain, ended up in and out of that part of the Middle East. Some of it might have been secret. I don't know. Don't talk about it. But I said, well, at least, you know, if anything, you'd be proud of the fact you did graduate the academy. They put you over there, and luckily you came back in one piece. But that was one of those things. But yeah, it's today is you're not would say now you're not serving your country going over there. Now if you want to defend it here, if somebody attacked, fine. But that's the problem. That's what,
When people tell me thank you for your service. When people say thanks for yourself, they go, you know, I just kind of like, I'm not going to argue with them. You know, they're saying, my father was the one who got me out of this depression. He said, Angelo, you didn't know what you were going. Because once I learned the truth, I was like, oh my God, I fought for Zog. Oh my God, you know, what have I done? He's like, Angelo, you didn't know any better. You didn't know what you were doing. Your intention was good. So you have to work with that. And a lot of the guys don't, none of the guys know the truth. I highly doubt any troop or pilot or anyone is like, I know, I'm going to go work for the banks in the New World Order. No, they don't know that. They're duped just like I was when I was 18 or 17. And then you go in and try to be a patriot. That's why they got all these movies. That's why they make it all hardcore looking because you want to be a man. And you want to, that's why they give us medals, right? Oh, here's a medal for something, you know. It's all ego driven. And, you know, that's why they use people who are willing to sacrifice their lives for a greater good. Unfortunately, it's for a greater evil. They just don't know it. And that's why it's our job, for those of us who know the truth, it's our job to wake up as many people so they do know the truth so we can prevent these wars. And I think the reason why we didn't go into Syria was because people were sick of the Iraq war and what happened. So that kind of helped. And I think if we keep doing this, we can avoid war with Iran. That's why I'm doing a lot of activism with people in Iran to not go to war with Iran at all costs.
Oh, so. And that's what they're promoting. They're pushing. They're just pushing.
Yep.
It's really the last country in the Middle East that they haven't attacked. And Trump, in April, right after he became president, he did bomb Syria.
Yes, and that's why I left.
In April.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's like I said. Yeah, don't watch TV. That's the first thing. I haven't had my own for a long time.
I was talking to Thomas Goodrich. I don't know if it was on your show, Deanna, or maybe Rick Adams in the past. We were talking about some of his books on, like, going back to World War II and some of the atrocities we did, like, you know, those firebombing. I said, wouldn't it be great if you could find if their pilots still alive and write about it? They would talk about their experience. How did they feel doing things like this? So the guys going down that actually claimed they were machine gunning survivors, trying to, you know, if they would talk about that, would you see what was in their mindset if they still remember that? Yeah. Anyway, well, thank you very much, Angelo, and I'll definitely, if I remember the book's name of the book again, I'll try to look that up.
Just go there. You'll see my book, and you'll look at that, and you can get paperback or you can get a Kindle version. It's up to you, whatever you like. But I think you would really enjoy the book. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. Absolutely, you would.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. God bless you both.
Thank you. Take care, John. All righty. We have Tom in Utah.
Hi, Deanna, and I forgot your name, the gentleman's
Angelo.
Song with you.
It's okay.
Angelo.
My father's name Thomas, actually. My father's name Thomas, so Tom.
Okay, he has to pay a finder's fee.
Yes,
oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm 80, so I probably, I'm older than he.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, I got a little diverted while the program's been going, so I don't know if you hit an issue which I have told my students about using the and, you know, the filler words when you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, instead of doing that, use that space to not only think, but also to hear the response of your listener.
True. That's a good point. Yes. Yep. Feel the room out, too. Get the body language from the audience as well. Yeah.
Right, that way you can tell whether they're understanding you, and that also that pause, and I think you did mention that, gives them a chance to not only, you know, it gives them a chance to think about what you said to them and see if they understand it before they go on.
Yes.
That gives them an opportunity, you know, like you say, with the body language or any verbal reactions to them, you can respond and correct whatever they don't understand.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, the only other thing I could add is I was a instructor for hundreds of young men that went into Vietnam. I was called, well, not that I was called, but I responded, like you say, to the propaganda. And mm-hmm. I thought that the Vietnam War was a legitimate, vital, opportunity of combat or correction, police action, as they called it, right?
Yes.
It wasn't until I got into the middle of that mess that I realized it was all poppycock and had nothing to do with freeing the people of communism simply to protect the investment of the American investors that had bought into the agricultural production of Vietnam. And I lost about 32 of the young men that I taught in that whole thing. And so when I came back, I was very bitter. Of course, I wasn't vocal about it, and thankfully I hadn't, killed anybody while I was there. So I didn't have to deal with that pain, but I realized or understood the pain of the man that I had prepared to go there and kill.
Yes.
And this may sound a little bit fanatical, but I've decided to become as harmless as possible against all of creation. And by the way, the benefits are far beyond what you can imagine. When you stop harming anything, you don't even have to deal with the diseases, whether they're mental or physical.
Right.
So there is literally an opportunity for blessings beyond your comprehension when you cease to bring harm to anything. I worked initially in veterinary pathology and human pathology, so I even understand the horror that occurs in the slaughterhouse as well as in the abortion clinic.
Mm-hmm. I write about the slaughterhouses and what they do to these animals is just horrific. The way they inject them with chemicals and hormones and make them larger than they should be, where the chicken's legs snap and the cow's... I was doing veganism toward the end of the book. I was like, I was going to go vegan. So I wanted to put the argument out there for both groups, but I made it more veganism is more moral. If you accept that life, less death is more superior, then veganism is a moral, more moral diet. Can it be done? That's another question. On a world scale, can it be done? That's another question. But during the writing of this book towards the end, I was practicing veganism and I was, I kind of was biased on that, but it's still true, though. If you accept that less suffering is better, then veganism is the morally superior diet in regards to that.
Right.
And can anyone do that? Could everyone do it? Maybe not. Maybe it's not the best thing for humans. But, I went down that path. It was beautiful to not eat anything of flesh of any animals. But at the end of the day, there's still death no matter what we do on this planet, whether it be pests, whether it be insects. So I stay away from the most cows. The more sentient a being is, I try not to do it, So I do chickens. I know chickens are like dinosaurs, basically. But what you're doing basically is kind of like Jainism, right, where you don't hurt any animals. And I write in my book, there was a worm I came across in the hot sun. And I walked by him. And I said, wow, nature is just brutal. Then I said to myself, I could stop this. And I turned around and put that worm under a bush. And it's such a mundane story, but it's true. And I wrote it down in the book, and it was trying to show people that we nature is brutal, but we can do what we can as human beings. And I say in the book also, first you must do no harm yourself in this world.
Yeah, nature gives us an opportunity to exercise our empathy.
Yes, exactly.
And we should do that, and it transmits into our relationship with each other.
Yes, yes.
Plus, on the side, since pathology has been my professional experience, there is no disease that's transmitted to you through a vegetable or a fruit. There's none. All of it has to be within the blood, flesh, and fat of a creature. So there's a side benefit of being empathetic with nature. You don't have to deal with disease. That's the side benefit. But anyway, I appreciate your message, and I do have a I've been doing battle for people saving babies since I had my epiphany. It is a costly battle, but it's well worth it. If you get a chance, look at a website I have up called lifesave.org or gassingamerica.com. I exposed the poisoning of 34 million, especially babies are the victims. I appreciate what you've done, and Deanna, too. Deanna kind of runs away from me because she knows how fanatic I am, how strict I am.
I'm okay.
It's all good. It's divine to be like that. It's the discipline that makes you separate.
Yeah, and it won't hurt us. Yeah. It doesn't hurt to be vegan at all.
Yeah.
It does not hurt.
Nope.
Anyway, like I say, I teach my students, and I've taught in 32 universities, believe it or not. And I tell them, when you feel like you need to pause, don't say, or you know. They're very disruptive, aren't they?
Yeah.
So just go to silence, think about it, let your listener think, and you'll both benefit.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Anyway, thank Deanna, and thank you, Angel.
Angel, yeah, it's translates to Angel, but it's Angel. Yes, thank you very much, Tom.
Yeah, yo hablo español.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you.
Latin, too. Latin is a terrible language. It's the language of the liars.
Yeah.
Doctors and lawyers.
Well.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. Take care.
That story about the worm, that was so touching to me. that you would do that. That really touched my heart.
Yep.
Because it showed how humane and kind that you are. I think that was probably one of the things in the book that was so touching.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, I remember it clear as day when I did that. It was just, wow, I could stop this suffering. For a measly worm who probably didn't even feel it.
It's okay.
But I could do it, so why not? Why not do it for the worm? And I do it to this day with spiders or anything that I used to smash when I was a kid.
Just
anything in the house that won't kill us, I put it outside and say, good luck.
Good for you.
Good luck, Mr. Spider.
did you ever hear the starfish about this person that was going along the beach and picking up starfish and throwing them back into the ocean?
Yeah, I heard about that.
Right. And somebody says, why are you doing that? It doesn't matter. It's not going to make a difference. And he said, it makes a difference to the starfishes that I threw back. And you're the hero. Thank you so much, Angelo, for being on the program. And bless your heart for doing this book.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you letting me come here to talk about it.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank
care.
You. Bless right. your heart.
Thank you.
All righty. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk with you next week.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.